Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, after 3 years and a global pandemic, we, the Tennis Podcast, myself, Catherine Mitica, David Law, Matt Roberts, are back on what I'm going to designate our favourite bench in the world.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
We are atop the Wimbledon roof, overlooking Court 18, surrounded by trees which are blowing heavily in the very, very strong breeze, slightly stronger breeze than we'd like, but I'm going to paint this as as an idyllic scene, so I'll leave the breeze there. The final finishing touches are being made to this wonderful place. The roses are being painted red or purple, whatever colour they paint the roses here. And it is just an absolutely beautiful sight, and it is very, very special to be back here. I know we covered Wimbledon last year. David, you were on site for the BBC. Matt and I came as fans and spectators, and that was fun. It was great. It was so brilliant to have Wimbledon back and to cover it and to talk about it, but this is different.
Yeah.
And it's very special.
Yeah, I wouldn't call this the best day of the tennis year because there's actually no tennis, but it's one of the more special ones because we're here pretty much on our own. And obviously it's going to be lovely to see the crowds and the excitement, which I suspect will be a little reminiscent of Roland Garros this year. I know that people were in last year, but people will be in from the start. The queue will be back. This more or less feels like normal Wimbledon, and in terms of at least the pandemic. Anyway, there's a lot going on else in the world, but still, there's a feeling around here of optimism as you walk around. All we come across are a few other journalists and broadcasters, and lots of officials and stewards who are just being put through the paces and told what to do tomorrow. And we've got the run of the place. I've already been and walked virtually onto centre court. There was a little sign that says "keep off the grass" that was right in front of my feet.
Well, Billie Jean ignores those.
Yeah.
So,
well,
she gets away with it.
I decided,
generally,
for the good of my credentials, maybe I'd not. But yeah, it's a beautiful sight.
Yes, a feeling of contentment. Nowhere we'd rather be, I think.
Yeah, well, neither of you have horrific bee sting memories from this spot, so it's all very well for you to say. But anyway, it is still, bee sting memories aside, it is wonderful.
This is exactly
to be back.
Who were we sitting with? It was
Mary Carrillo.
Yes. 3 years ago, folks, if you weren't listening back then, mid podcast, Catherine got a bee sting.
Was stung by a bee, yeah. And David and Matt were useless.
That's unfair.
That is rewriting history, I think.
I mean, initially,
I would
useless.
Say eventually useful, but slow in getting to usefulness. There was a lot
they
of.
They tried to charge me for ice.
Yeah, and David was mostly keen to record the episode.
Three years ago, Matt, that was described as heroic. Now it's described as useless. Our quest for ice. Anyway.
Anyway, David, you mentioned that you were just millimetres away from centre court. There's a new entrance to centre court.
I'd heard about this, but I hadn't seen it. And look, we won't know what it's like until tomorrow in person when we see it on TV and if you're in the stands. But this strikes me as a spectacular addition to the theatre of centre court, because unlike in the past where players come out of a sort of wooden and glass door behind the scenes and then come around a corner and onto the side of the court and end up being seen by the crowd. Now they've converted the backstop of the court, literally where the line umpires and the ball kids stand and balls smash into from serves, that has now become a door that opens with two doors opening out wide. You wouldn't know they're there until the moment they're opened, and out come the players literally onto the court from the backstop.
Matt, if I say stars in their eyes, will you know, will you understand the reference point?
Tonight, Matthew,
I'm going to be a tennis player.
Yeah.
I hope there will be smoke and maybe a drum roll and some sort of karaoke performance of Diana Ross.
Pretty dramatic, I think.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. It's always been quite a low-key entrance onto centre court, hasn't it? As you said, just players... just suddenly there. There's no great fanfare when they're, you know, they're not like announced or anything. This sounds quite a bit grander, I suppose.
And the other things that are noticeable from having stood next to centre court today, they've painted the chair umpire's chair almost in colours that I suspect they might have used 100 years ago. This is the centenary of centre court on this site. It's 100 years since this site had this centre court. And they're trying to recreate that feel. They've got 100 written on the chair umpire's chair as well. There are just little touches that make you realise what they're getting at here. And I personally think it looks lovely.
I'm really excited about that new door.
Mm.
Door makes it sound extremely unexciting, doesn't
entrance.
It? But yeah. I'm pumped for that. I think that could be quite a moment, actually, when Djokovic, the defending champion, takes to the court tomorrow. Let's get into the draws and media day, because we've had both of those in the last 48 hours. Draw was done on Friday. It's a proper draw here at Wimbledon. Unfortunately, it's only available on Wimbledon Radio. It's not available to watch anywhere. I mean, it's a good draw that Wimbledon do.
It's
Why don't they
draw.
Make more of it?
Yeah, I mean, it has that feeling, for those of you from the UK who maybe are into football, of the old FA Cup third round draw, where they're pulling numbers out of the bowl. And
which used
and
to be live on BBC One. Maybe it still is.
Yeah.
Or certainly BBC Two,
it,
you know. It's
definitely feels like something that they could be making something of. Look, I love radio. Obviously, as somebody who works for the BBC, a radio team, but I just feel that this is something that could be shown.
I say it every time. Tennis has draws every single week, and yet it still doesn't seem to know how to do them in the best way,
It doesn't know whether... Is this an admin? Is this a piece of admin that should be sort of a function behind the scenes? Or is this is this for show?
Hmm.
Is this a part of the theatre of the sport?
And it totally, in my opinion, is the latter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, it also serves an admin, crucial admin function. But, you know, why put it on a stage at all? Why make anything of it if you think it's a piece of admin? Anyway, we love a draw. And this one was... Well, actually, given our level of expectation, or certainly anticipation about this draw, and the fact that there were three enormous, big, floating names in it.
Who are your three?
I've actually forgotten the third one.
Who are your other two?
Other two were Serena Williams and Andy Murray. Is my third one Nick Kyrgios? If so, I would like to revoke the words enormous and big. I'll keep floating.
Nick Kyrgios, Bianca Andreescu,
yeah. So, look, two big, looming former champion names unseeded in the draw. And actually, they fell in very unremarkable, non-gasp-inducing places, which is probably a good thing for the tournament long term. But just in the moment, and in terms of, you know, barnstorming first rounds, wasn't what it quite could have been.
Yeah.
But
Andreescu is the most interesting. I was looking where she was put, and she's in a really stacked section.
Well, what have we got? We've got top seed, obviously, Iga Świątek. Matt and I went to her press conference yesterday. We'll talk about her shortly. She's in the same half as Serena Williams, who opens against Harmony Tan. That is a good draw. Coco Gauff is in that half. Simona Halep, Bianca Andreescu. And that half will be playing on Tuesday. The other half of the draw, the bottom half, the main seeds in there are Ons Jabeur, Emma Raducanu, Maria Sakkari, Garmedia Muguruza's in that draw. It's not imbalanced, but I would call it somewhat top heavy.
I think it's extremely top heavy.
Right.
Yeah, I really do. I think all the names we were looking for in that draw, other than probably Raducanu, who fell in the bottom half, everyone else is in that top half. And I think the seeds in the bottom half who are sort of propping that side of the draw up are Paula Badosa and Annette Contaveit. And I don't think anyone would be expecting them to make deep runs. Look, they might, but they're not coming in any form
Annette
at all.
Annette Contaveit is the second seed here, which feels weird. I know rankings are rolling 12-month rankings for a reason, and I know she had extraordinary results at the end of last year, but the lopsidedness of her results in the last 12 months does make that feel quite awkward, I think, her being the second seed.
Did you used to like the seeding formula at Wimbledon? Because they've obviously done away with that now in both the men's and the women's. I always quite liked it.
I liked it as well. I wish that it wasn't only at Wimbledon. If you like the concept and the principle of it, then the French Open should have been doing it as well. And, you know, the speciality of clay and grass is more so than hard courts. But I still think they all could have applied it to an extent.
Yes. I suppose the argument for Wimbledon is that you only had maybe one tournament on grass to build up any ranking points, whereas clay, you've got a full proper season on clay. You can get yourself into a seeded position, perhaps, or higher seeded. But I agree. I do think if you're going to have it, it would have been nice to have it everywhere.
What did you think of what they used to do before the formula, when it was literally the committee deciding whether they liked the positions of the rankings or not?
No, not in favour of that. And then they'd
look back and they'd go, oh, hold on a minute, Pete Sampras needs to be a lot higher than that. And, well,
that is so crazy.
Bad example, perhaps, because he was always number one. But, I mean, you know, you would get an inflated ranking for a player with a grass court pedigree who just had results, and they'd say, I think we should stick him up to three.
Now, David, you are the only one of the three of us that at this moment of recording, it's 4:30 on Sunday, the eve of the tournament, have completed your pre-tournament predictions,
which means
you put yourself in the firing line.
All right.
Tell us, David, tell us who your women's finalists are.
Iga Świątek.
Mm-hmm. Solid, yeah.
And Beatrice Haddad-Meyer.
You've actually said her name wrong.
Have I?
I think it's Beatrice, isn't it?
That's what I meant.
Right, okay.
I gasped when I saw David had Admire
so
in the final.
he's now claiming it was an administrative error.
Well, she was in my semis. I
meant
I know that.
To click on Jabeur.
She was deliberately in my semis, and then I absolutely picked her on the spreadsheet. And then when I looked at my draw, I realised, because I'd written it out. I left the house this morning, folks, at 5 a.m.
How many times did you write Beatrice Haddad-Meyer's name?
Tell you, three. Because I started at the quarterfinal stages. Yeah, she's here. Clear as day, up against Yelena Ostapenko. Then she's up against Ons Jabeur. And then it says Jabeur. And for some reason, I didn't put that when I entered it. So I reckon internally there's been a squabble. And actually, the real me wanted Haddad-Meyer to win. Or thinks she will win.
But there is also a part of you that thinks Ons Jabeur is in the final, which leads me to the question, David. Ons Jabeur not in a mix in your lifetime?
Hence,
not a question, it's an accusation.
I think that that's what swayed me, ultimately. I think that that's the reason I ended up not going for Ons Jabeur, because deep down, I don't think in my lifetime she's ever going to be in a mix.
But Beatrice Haddad-Meyer is.
Well,
hang on. Is Haddad-Meyer in your mix for Wimbledon?
It turns out, yeah, except, well, no, she,
and Ons Jabeur isn't.
No, she can't be, because I still think she loses to Świątek in the final.
So it's a mix of one for you.
Yeah.
Are you feeling under attack, David?
No, I feel great.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's work through Haddad-Meyer.
Okay.
Well,
tell me her record of late.
Well,
she's been beating everybody.
She was on a 12-match winning streak on grass.
Pretty good.
Which, you know, she is one of the form players coming into this tournament.
Yeah, there you go.
No Grand Slam pedigree, however.
Yeah, I know, but now she's just turning it on.
you're just hoping that she
semi-finalist
keeps it
Eastbourne,
rolling.
David. She couldn't even win Eastbourne. Like, it's a great result for Beatrice at Admire, but you're picking somebody that couldn't even reach the final of Eastbourne to reach the final of Wimbledon.
She looked on it to me.
When she was losing in straight sets to Petra Kvitova.
Yeah, but that can happen against Kvitova, can't it? As I know to my cost, many a time, six times we reckon that I've picked Kvitova to win Grand Slam titles that she's lost before the second week.
Second day?
Several times. We had to have an emergency podcast about her, the first one we ever had. Because I'd picked her to win Australia.
Do we feel like we've worked that through? I mean, as far as that prediction can be worked through.
Well, I think it just the wider point is I look at that half the draw and it is... Look, I've got Alison Risk in the quarterfinals, right? Now, if you'd have told me that I'd have had Alison Risk and Beatrice had Admire in the quarterfinals, I would have been surprised. But then I look at the draw and I think, well, who's going to beat them? And I can't pick those players. And there are other sections of the draw that I would have been absolutely sure I'd have gone with somebody, but they're coming up against somebody
Kerber
else, I think.
Is in that half of the draw. She's at the top of the bottom half.
Yeah, but she's going out to Ons Jabeur, you see.
Right, okay.
I think
not,
it's
not
quite
in the mix,
a good
I'll
draw
say that again.
For Ostapenko.
Ostapenko, finalist in Eastbourne.
Yeah.
Belinda Bencic.
Mm-hmm. If she's fit, I like it. I think it's a good draw for her.
Yeah. She said if.
Absolutely no ifs around Beatrice at Admire, obviously.
Nope.
And it's a great draw for Ons Jabeur.
It's a great draw for Ons Jabeur. Now, let's work through the what I now find to be a laughable concept that Ons Jabeur isn't in the mix and never will be.
Yeah. Look, she's got all the shots, all the skill in the world, and she absolutely should... be capable, but I have a big belief in all this that until you do it, I'm not convinced you can.
Okay, so nobody that's never
had
won
Admire,
a slam,
David.
Yeah,
so, but hang on, nobody. but David, applying that
earlier,
logic, you're saying that nobody can be in a mix before they've won a slam.
No, but I think
you're
she's
saying Jabeur's got a few scars.
She's got a lot of scar tissue, I think, and very recent. Scar tissue as well.
Okay.
Because of the
I understand that as a point. However, having attended her pre-tournament press conference yesterday, I don't think that's a scar from Paris. Or if it is a scar, it is one that is strengthening her.
She was talking very confidently in Paris as well.
It was different. Back me up here, Matt. It was different.
She spoke about Wimbledon in the same way that Yannick Noah spoke about Roland Garros in 1983.
Oh, great.
She sort of got me believing in fate and destiny. Yeah. And, you know, she said that...
She would have had you believing.
I'm sure she would.
Catherine and I turned to each other and went, Jabeur. Jabeur is so in the mix. She could win this.
And she was
she could win this tournament.
So she's done so much working through what happened in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Has she?
So much, yeah. She talked about that so openly.
What regard?
The pressure and how she didn't deal with it. She said she felt like she had overplayed going in. She used that word. She said, finding that balance between getting into form and building up momentum and also being fresh and peaking at the right time. She hadn't nailed that for Paris. And basically she said, I'm not letting that happen again. I know what happened. I've worked through it. I've learned from it. I won't let that happen again.
I actually thought watching her play Eastbourne just doubles made me more confident for her, actually, because I thought that setting alongside Serena Williams, you've just been handpicked by the great Serena Williams to be her partner because you're that good and you're that cool. I think that probably did wonders for her self-esteem and confidence.
I think so too.
And it did make me think, well... Because she seems to me, I don't know her, I've interviewed her the once and I've been to a lot of her press conferences, she comes across to me as somebody who feels things very deeply and needs to be inspired, needs to get over the hump of self-doubt. And little things like that might be a difference maker for her.
And she really embraced playing with Serena, didn't she? It wasn't Viktor Troitsky partnering Novak Djokovic vibes and just looking like he was having the worst day of his life.
After you.
Yeah. She was... I think she realised that she was... I suppose you're never the leader on the court when you're next to Serena Williams, but she was the player in the better form. She was the one sort of running after the lobs and that sort of thing. She sort of took on that role. And I'm also fascinated to see what it does to the kind of reception she gets here at Wimbledon, because I still don't know whether the Wimbledon crowd, obviously she had a run last year here to the quarterfinals and she was brilliant. I still don't know whether your average tennis fan in this country knows that much about Ons Jabeur. I think just her being partnered with Serena Williams in the last week will have got people's attention, will get people talking, and she's just glowing, isn't she? I cannot see what happened to her in Paris happening again. Look, maybe we'll be talking in a couple of days' time and revisiting that, but I have a lot of faith in Jabeur this tournament.
How much faith do we have in Serena Williams this tournament? I know that's an impossible question because we have so little to go on. We have two doubles matches in Eastbourne. We have some reports from people that have caught glimpses of her practices here. But I'm still going to ask the question. It was a fascinating press conference, wasn't it, yesterday from Serena Williams. There were great zingers in there, but a lot of them contradicted one another. On one hand, she said she was asked about playing doubles in Eastbourne with Jabeur and how and why that came about. And she said, well, I knew there was no way I'd be ready to play singles. And you're thinking, okay, well, that was less than a week ago. And then she's asked, why are you here and what would you consider a good result? And she says, you know the answer to that, i.e. winning the title. Mm. And you're sort of picking through it, trying to figure out what's the reality here. Maybe all those things are true. Maybe, you know, the laws of logic don't apply to Serena Williams. But trying to make sense of it, as fun as it was, is quite hard.
Well, I have contrasting opinions on what might happen. I there's a part of me that thinks she might be able to play her way into this tournament by beating Harmony Tan, who's a player that, you know, isn't the worst draw in the world. You know, she could play Cerebes Tormo in the next round, and that's a regular ball coming your way that she might be able to get some timing on and start teeing off on and get some confidence. Alternatively, she might play and play one good match and then suddenly find she's really stiff the next day. It's so hard to judge, isn't it? To come into to Wimbledon having not played singles anywhere for a year, I mean, it's pretty absurd, isn't it, as a way of playing the tournament. But she is Serena Williams, and so I refuse to count her out, because that level of greatness could ignite at any time.
Yeah, I agree. That is how I end up feeling about it. There was an interesting line right at the end of the press conference, which Chris Clary got out of Serena. And
it was probably the line, wasn't it? Molly McElwee was sat behind us, and as she stood up to leave, she went, well done, Chris.
Where, obviously, you know, she'd spoken about, you know the answer. We all know what that was referring to. She wants to win the title. But then she also gave this line about how the big motivation for coming back was to give herself a different memory to the one she had on centre court last year.
Oh, wow.
He asked her, how motivating was that for you to come back at all and to do the work required to make it back? And she said, very.
Mm.
And she was pretty... I was expecting her to deflect that question, quite honestly, because Chris was quite direct about it. It was a great question. And she didn't. She took a beat, she pondered on it, and she said, very motivating.
Mm.
You know, well, fast forward 12 months, we'll be having this same conversation about Federer and a 6-love set to Hubert Hurkacz.
I've got to be honest, I get that, and I'm glad she's back.
Mm.
Whether she can win this title or not, or compete for it, nothing can be as bad as that memory, I wouldn't have thought, because that was depressing, seeing somebody of her stature just unable to play at all.
And can we talk about the Patrick Mouratoglou line?
Oh, yes.
When she was asked, this is your first tournament in, well, about 10 years, isn't it, without Patrick Mouratoglou, how are you feeling? And she said, it's great. without Patrick Mouratoglou. And then, perhaps even more damningly, said she hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah. She said, oh, that's an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that. And then there's a long pause and she goes, it feels great. And then she kind of softened the edges and said, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm just so happy to be back. It's all good, but...
Kind of feels like she has been thinking about that, actually.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the gist, it's difficult to know exactly what happened when he went to work with Simone Halep, but it felt like he really didn't think she was coming back, so he went elsewhere. Mm. That's how it felt like.
She was asked to say the moment she decided that she wanted to play Wimbledon, and, you know, she sort of kept up the air of mystery. She was quite vague about it. She said, you know, before the French
Open.
She
said, oh, it's been quite a while, and like...
Weeks, months.
That can mean so many different things. When you're waiting for a pizza delivery, quite a while is 25 minutes.
She did say to that American football player, Aaron Rodgers, at some event that, you know, I'm going to be back at Wimbledon, but...
And no one believed
her. I did take that with a pinch of salt, but she did say it a while.
She very vaguely said, before the French Open, and then she sort of went, I think... yeah, lots of mystery. There are going to be every eyeball in the place is going to be on Serena Williams against Harmony Tan, isn't it? That'll be on Tuesday, as will Iga Świątek, who is opening up centre court in lieu of defending champion Ash Barty. Now, look, Świątek is a worthy choice for that. She's the world number one. She is the best player in the world. I don't want to quite say she deserves it because, you know, the tradition is the person who deserves it is the person who won the title 12 months ago. So in that sense, you know, neither she nor Simona Halep technically deserve it. But I am sad. I'm sad that it's not Simona Halep. Yeah. I just think that would have been such an easy, lovely... It's just such an open goal.
And Stu Fraser reported that one of the reasons that contributed to that decision was that Halep had pulled out of her semi-final match last week, and therefore her fitness is in doubt. Now,
it was a crick in the neck, though, that she pulled. It was very clearly a non-serious, I want to get to Wimbledon type injury.
Tomorrow, Emma Raducanu and Andy Murray are going to be back-to-back on centre court, having both suffered abdominal strains recently. So that doesn't completely feel consistent. Unless they've got knowledge that Halep really can't play, well, I mean, for a start, that would bother me that she's even going to try. But she should be playing first up on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think so. That slot is for, as you said, champions. And I also think, you know, of course, Iga Świątek will, you know, accept that and grace that court and be a very worthy player to come out in that position. But I also think a part of her would have wanted to have earned that the right way, you know, win the Wimbledon title and then have it properly. I agree. I just think it's an open goal. You've got a former champion in the draw who's never had that honour.
Because she was injured in 2021. Well,
and there was a pandemic in 2020. Yeah.
So she had already had to wait two years. And she had talked, hadn't she, about how much that was going to mean to her. And then she got injured just in the... She came to Wimbledon, didn't she? I think, Halep. And then got an injury right on the eve of it.
And a tweet by Craig Tizer, Ash Barty's coach, suggested that Ash Barty wanted it to be Halep as well. But anyway, it's not.
Anyway, look, it'll be lovely to see Iga Świątek open up centre court, and I don't imagine there being any difficulties for her against Jana Fett of Croatia. Do we see any difficulties for her before the big meeting with Beatriz Haddad-Meier in the final? where do we start seeing difficulties for her? But by the way, I've just seen that Garbiñe Muguruza is not, as I said, in the bottom half of the draw. She's in fact in the top half of the draw, quite near in Iga Świątek's quarter. Anyway,
I suppose Jill Teichmann might be a possible fourth round match of danger, and then the quarter final could be anybody from Jessica Pegula or Bianca Andreescu or Garbiñe Muguruza, who you've mentioned, Elena Rybakina. That's a stacked section.
By the way, what do the draw gods have against Jessica Pegula?
Yes.
That is four straight Grand Slam tournaments where she's been drawn in the quarter of the number one seed.
Yeah, that is tough, isn't it?
Goff's in the next quarter down. She's a potential semi-finalist.
Semi-final opponent, yeah. Do we think she'll reach that seeding?
I've got her there.
She was, I mean, this is broken record now, but she was so impressive in press yesterday. She's incredible. She was on the cover of the Telegraph Women's Sports Supplement this week, a piece written by Molly McElwee of the Telegraph that she flew out to Berlin to interview Coco Gauff for. And just the more you see and hear of her, the more you want to see and hear of her. You know, she was asked about the devastating Supreme Court decision in the States to reverse Roe v. Wade, and she had thought about what she wanted to say. She'd already put out a tweet about it the night before, so she'd set out her stall about how she felt, but she obviously wanted to elaborate on it, and you know, just gave such a considered, mature, empathetic, articulate response. Just she's brilliant.
And adding to it, her understanding that, yeah, that might make life difficult for her in some ways, but she is motivated by her career because it enables her the platform to be able to state what she thinks about important subjects.
Yes, if you're someone who wants to use your platform, you want your platform to be as big as it possibly can be, and she knows that winning and doing well in tennis will enable that, and so she uses that as fuel, was the word she used. Mm. And honestly, this is the second straight Grand Slam where, you know, devastating things are happening in the United States. You know, it was a couple of days into the French Open where there was the mass shooting at the school in Texas, and here we've had the horrific overturning of Roe v. Wade, and juggling these feelings of anger and fear and disappointment and, you know, all of these big emotions, helplessness really, with also trying to compete and be a pro athlete. And Coco Gauff manages to do that at 18 years old. It's absolutely astonishing the way she does it.
Do we think she can win the tournament?
Well, I've got her losing to Swiatek.
Is she in the mix? This is not directed at people that think the mix is of one.
I think for me, she probably is. Just because I think one of the big things about this tournament that is making it feel a little bit odd, perhaps, is that a lot of the big names, and this applies to the men's draw as well, we haven't seen on grass.
Mm.
So I think we're all... Well, we haven't seen on grass recently, I should say. So I think we're all probably expecting Iga Świątek to do really well. I just don't see it as much of a guarantee as it was at Roland Garros. I think, you know, it's possible that more players will have much more of a chance. And I would include Coco Gauff in that mix, if you like.
Would Emma Raducanu be in the mix if she weren't such an injury question mark?
To me, I still think she needs a year or two because I just think this is a lot, all of it. And I don't see how she can handle all of it now after the year that's gone without being affected in some way, whether she's physically fit or not. And I just hope that she can have a good experience.
I mean, we're at the state of sort of... We're in a sort of postmodern state of Raducanu fever where we're already analysing Raducanu fever, aren't we? And that Max Eisenbud, her agent that works for IMG, has been doing interviews or done an interview with the BBC to explain and defend the endorsements that she has and the number of hours and days of her year that they take up. I think he says, you know, is actually only 18, and in total 18 days worth of commitment, and that's always scheduled around her tennis commitments. You know, she'd never be doing anything just before or just after a slam. But, you know, feels like in the space of 12 months we've been on the journey, and then we've also sort of been on the post journey, and I don't know, it's sort of a very metaverse-y situation to be in, Raducanu hype, isn't it? And I want to be on the hype train because I'm still so excited by her, and I still so love watching her, and the thought of seeing her play on centre court for the first time. You know, she went to that She went on that fourth round run last year without playing on centre court, and all of that excites me so much. But I don't think she's fully fit, for one, as much as she didn't talk about that much in press. She was very keen to deliver the line that she was ready. She was ready to play, much like she did on the eve of the French Open. Or actually, she played pretty well, didn't she, against Noskova? I don't think she's fully fit from everything I've heard, and I've said this before on the pod about abdominal injuries. I just don't think you can shortcut the rehab on those. So the level of hype and discourse and stuff is making me somewhat uncomfortable, because I just worry it's going to reach a grinding halt at some stage, and I just want to afford her space and grace for that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at this stage, I am totally not looking beyond round one for her. She's got Alison van Ooytvanck, who I think has already won 7 matches on grass in singles this season. She won a title just below WTA level. She's a good grass court player. She's not actually had brilliant results at Wimbledon in the past. She has had one standout year here. It's a difficult draw. It's a doubly difficult draw when you're coming in with injuries and the expectation that is on her. So if she makes it through that, and she has never lost in round one of a slam, and she looks physically okay, it's possible that she's got a workable draw. But I just can't look beyond that first match for
her. Yeah, we'll reassess round by round what level of hype we're prepared to engage in, Emma Raducanu.
We know, though, that if she goes and plays really well tomorrow, we're going to be so pumped.
Yeah, there'll be a WhatsApp group with a punny version of her name involved. Caroline Garcia beat Bianca Andreescu in the Bad Homburg final to win the title there. And Petra Kvitova beat Yelena Ostapenko to win the title in Eastbourne. Either of those two in the mix? Or those four, perhaps? Ostapenko, Kvitova, Andreescu, Garcia. Kvitova, David, I can see the Kvitova cogs turning.
Burned too many times there. but look, they're all capable. Any one of those players, maybe, I'm not so sure on Garcia, but Kvitova or Andreescu or Ostapenko, if they hit a hot streak, their games are good enough to rip through this draw and maybe even take out Świątek. But, you still have to go with what you feel generally is more likely to happen, and that's just that they won't do that.
I could definitely see I haven't done my predictions yet, so colour's not nailed to the mast, but glancing down, I could see myself predicting an Ostapenko-Jabeur semi-final.
Would absolutely watch.
Yeah, now on to the men's draw.
You're forgetting how to admire again.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On to the men's draw, David. Now you've got your obvious picks here. You've got your Djokovic's, your defending champion. You've got your Nadal's on for a calendar slam. You've got your your dark horse, two-time former champion Andy Murray. But you've also got your Maxime Cressys, David, your throwback 1990s grass court player who's just reached a final and been bitten by Taylor Fritz in Eastbourne.
Mm. I've got two crossings out in that section because I did think of Cressy and I did think of Félix Auger-Aliassime, who Cressy plays in the first round. And then
you're gonna
win
that.
Then I also went with Fritz.
Is Maxime Cressy going to take out Félix Auger-Aliassime? That is the question.
Honestly,
that people come to this podcast for.
I went back and forth over this a couple of times. In the end, I think... Oh, dear. Because I think...
horrible draw for them both. That is a horrible draw for
Auger-Aliassime. The thing is, Cressy will just keep on bringing what he's got.
Mm.
But I do think maybe Auger-Aliassime has the returns that could... time up and not. So I'd go for Auger-Aliassime.
So David, your pick for future stardom on what probably ought to be his favourite surface is losing in round one.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, to be fair, Maxime Cressy is his own pick for future stardom. he doesn't need a hype man.
He's got his confidence back, and he says he thinks he's going to go really far.
Mm. So, Taylor Fritz beat him in the Eastbourne final. My mum sent me a WhatsApp about 45 minutes into this final saying, "Like the look of Taylor Fritz for Wimbledon, eyes emoji."
Oh, see, I'd say
no, that's a very tennis podcasty vague prediction. That's
the way. Yeah. I'd been turned off him by the way he lost to Jack Draper the week before at Queen's, but I saw that final against Cressy, and what I loved about it, apart from when he played some good tennis, but also I loved the way he celebrated. He collapsed to the ground.
Mm.
He was so overwhelmed at having won that title for a second time, and I love it when somebody does that the week before a Wimbledon and it means that much to them. Mm. They show it. The locals must have felt really uplifted that their tournament means that much to this guy from America who's such a big star and all the rest of it in American tennis. And I there has to be a question mark over whether that is good for your chances of rebounding and having enough in the tank and all that sort of thing. But he's a fit lad, isn't he?
I think I'm right in saying he won Eastbourne without dropping serve.
Wow.
Which is
crikey.
Real dominance, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got him in the quarters anyway.
He is in the sort of Holger Rune, Dan Evans, Félix Auger-Aliassime / Maxime Cressy quarter. And in the same half as Rafael Nadal, who is the number two seed. And at the bottom of the draw, he starts against Francisco Cerúndolo. Now, on the eve of the French Open, when we'd been to Rafael Nadal's press conference there, we were all about... I mean, we were practically relaying his jokes word for word, weren't we? Because they were so funny and so many of them. It was a very different Rafael Nadal.
All right.
Yesterday.
What was he like?
I mean, it was not no funny moments, because his delivery these days is such that every now and then he'll sort of do an accidental funny.
There was one moment when he was asked about the fact that this is the first Wimbledon without Federer in the draw, I think, for 24 years.
If you include 1998 juniors.
And he went, oh, juniors, oh, that doesn't count, sort of thing.
but he almost was a tiny bit grouchy, I thought. When the bloke said 24 years, I can't remember who the journalist was. I don't think he actually clocked who the journalist was.
I think it was Simon Graff.
Ah, was it? Yeah. He went, what? and he was very forthcoming about his foot and the treatment that he's had. Look, he says, it's fine. He says, I don't know how long it's going to last. I've got absolutely nothing to go on as to whether I'll wake up tomorrow and it'll all be back to how it was before, or whether this will last forever, or whether it will last a couple of weeks. So there's a lot of uncertainty, but at the moment it seems to be much improved. Now, obviously this is one 20-minute snapshot and he's not speaking to his nearest and dearest, he's speaking to the world's media, so it's not necessarily indicative of how he's really feeling deep down. But it wasn't the demeanour to me of somebody who's had chronic, deep, acute, chronic pain alleviated. You know, he was talking about how he couldn't, you know, he said, take tennis out of it, take, you know, take my career out of it. I was in pain just walking, you know, and that is emotionally debilitating. And that seems to touch wood, to a large extent anyway, have been, alleviated. And, I mean, he must just want to sing from the rooftops. But I don't know.
It is his shtick that a bit, though, isn't it?
It is.
Pre-tournament.
But, well, he did...
The point
I was making a few minutes ago was that he was very open about the foot, talked about it all, but then sort of this topic changed and he started talking about things other than the foot, like Federer not playing Wimbledon for the first time in 24 years. What? and then there was the foot came back up again. And he said, look, to be clear, I'll talk about the foot today. I know where you want to talk about it. But after today, we don't talk about the foot.
We'll get Catherine to do it on his behalf. It works a treat.
Yeah, more of that, please. I mean, I think the surface grass just has a lot to do with how Nadal feels. I think... it's the least predictable surface. It's the surface where Nadal feels the most uncomfortable. The matches are most out of his control. You know, even if he's not feeling 100% on clay, he knows what to do on a clay court. He feels comfortable there. He can play the matches he wants. It's taken out of his hands a bit more on this surface, and I just think that puts him perhaps a little bit more on edge generally, a little bit tighter generally about how he's feeling, and coupled with, as David says, his thing, which is to always talk down his chances. I guess I wasn't that surprised that he wasn't absolutely, you know, pumped about his Wimbledon chances. But, you know, I'll be pretty pumped for him because I think Nadal's going to do well here.
That's so vague.
Final, at least.
I've got him in the final.
He's got Cirundolo first round. His quarterfinal opponent would be either a Cilic perhaps, or a Fritz.
He's got a lot of players early who are actually good on grass. You know, he's got Sam Querrey, Dennis Kudla, Marin Cilic potentially, which I don't want to call it a difficult draw because I still think Nadal can navigate that, but. There's some grass court pedigree in there.
Do you both think Berrettini? He's beating Berrettini in the semis.
I do.
Yeah.
You think Berrettini will perform less well here than he did last year?
Well, I just think he's playing a better opponent.
Mm. Mm.
I think Nadal is. I think Berrettini's actually done quite well against Nadal, considering that's a really tough matchup for him because of his backhand. And I just think Nadal's going to be too good for him.
It's the best surface for Berrettini to play Nadal on, I would have thought. You know, behind that first serve, it's so difficult to find the Berrettini backhand. I just think if anyone can figure out ways, it's Novak Djokovic, as we saw in the final last year, and it's probably Rafael Nadal as well.
Well, look, I haven't made my predictions yet, so again, not set in stone and tattooed on my forehead, but... that is a matchup, assuming it happens, that I would feel like if it happened in round one, I'd be picking Berrettini. But if it gets to second Friday and Nadal's made it to the semis...
Fitness permitting,
then he's in form, isn't
he? He's
found his feet on grass. And that's a different Nadal to the one I've been thinking about right now, which is, you know, still has quite a lot of uncertainty around him. But he's also one for the calendar slam and had even more uncertainty around him ahead of... the two Grand Slams he's already won this year. The ESPN journalist Willy Weinbaum is clearly doing a piece on Nadal because he's been asking all other players on Media Day to describe the year that Rafael Nadal is having. And goodness me, players respond to that question differently. Some just love... I mean, Serena responded to it really well. For example, she said she found what Nadal is doing at his age and with his... physical issues incredibly inspiring, and she actually really warmed up into that answer, didn't she? And Świątek, of course, spoke giddily about Nadal. Tsitsipas sort of looked off into the middle distance, thought for too long, and then said, It's very good. His years, he's had a good year.
Great. He came out.
Did
with,
he say great?
He came out
he
with
managed
great.
A great.
He did.
Okay. Yeah. It's always a gamble, isn't it? Asking a player about another player in a press conference.
Yeah.
Okay, what about the top half of the men's draw? Novak Djokovic, obviously at the top of it, he opens against Sun Wukong. There could be a Thanasi Kokkinakis lurking. There could be a Kecmanovic. There could be an Opelka. There could be a John Isner. There could be a Carlos Alcaraz. That would be a quarter-final Alcaraz.
I think is a stunning draw for Novak Djokovic. I mean, honestly, I think you could have he could have hand-picked that draw, and those would have been some of the players he would have in his section. I think you mean
up to the quarterfinals?
Could play Andy Murray in the quarterfinals.
You think his quarter's all right generally?
Yeah, I think it's great generally, to be honest.
Alcaraz, Sinner,
there are
Murray.
Reports from people that watched some of Alcaraz play at Hurlingham this week that he's
very
got a
not
ways
ready on
to
grass.
Go. Got a ways to go.
I hovered over that one.
Who have you got in that quarter?
Alcaraz.
Have you?
And I hovered over who would win.
Did you?
Yeah.
Tennis-wise, I think it's hard to build a case for anyone in this draw other than Djokovic. I think since Andy Murray beat Djokovic in the 2013 Wimbledon final, only Sam Querrey has won three sets against Novak Djokovic on grass.
Where's Sam Querrey?
he's
Rafa Nadal's potential second round opponent. And look, he is so comfortable on this surface, and he so often does it as he's doing now without any proper preparation on grass, you know, no other tournaments. And the one thing that is making me doubt Djokovic slightly, look, he's still my pick for the title, is just the scenario surrounding him that this could be, very possibly, his last Grand Slam tournament for almost a year. Mm. Because we don't know whether he'll be able to play the US Open or the Australian Open. And he's aware of that, and that increases the pressure. And we know he feels pressure. And in that sense, it is a little bit like 2016, where it's an outside circumstance. You know, then it was a kind of lack of motivation. Almost now it's the opposite. It's almost so much motivation to capitalise on this that those outside factors could influence things, because tennis-wise, he clearly is the favourite for this tournament, I think. Mm.
And then also on all those factors you describe, I have a voice in my head saying the greater the pressure, the better he plays.
Yep,
always.
That's also possible.
But then this is new, isn't it? Mm-hmm. This is so new and weird and different. I mean, the more I read about it, the more it seems quite unlikely to me now that he will be able to play the US Open. It really doesn't seem likely that the US are going to change that condition for entry to the US. I believe they're having a sort of quite a battle PR-wise to encourage people to get their booster vaccinations in the US. There's been a drop-off in uptake, and I don't think they would risk any change in messaging that discourages COVID vaccination. I could be wrong, and things could change, absolutely. But it seems to me quite likely that Djokovic won't play a Grand Slam until the French Open next year, where he's unlikely to be the favourite. Mm. That is immense pressure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose things more likely might change ahead of Australia just because there's more time.
But it's not about things changing. It's having the deportation on his... It's not about COVID anymore. It's about having a prior deportation.
Yeah. But, I mean, that same thought has occurred to me. There's a premium on this tournament that there's never been for him before. Mm. He has to win it because Nadal's getting away.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Has anybody hovered over Andy Murray?
Yes.
In that quarter of the draw?
But I just... can't I think I hate to say this, but there has to be a chance that there are two retirements on centre court tomorrow with Raducanu and Andy Murray.
He was quite glum yesterday, Andy Murray. Now I know that's quite often his demeanour, you know, he's a doer Scott, isn't he? But there weren't even any sort of deadpan gags or anything, or little little moments of levity. What he was saying was quite upbeat, you know. He said that he felt his physical situation with the abdominal injury improved significantly this week, that he really turned a corner. I think he referenced Monday, didn't he, for that as being a bit of a breakthrough day. And he talked a lot about what it means to him to have Lendl back here with him, and just the fact of Lendl believing in him is massive, yeah, for Andy Murray. I think he feels quite emotional about that, actually. That
I think so too. The one thing I would say, I wasn't in the press conference, you two were, and maybe you'll discount this theory, but there are some long-time observers of Andy Murray in press conferences who believe that is his game face.
That is what I said. We had Matt and I had a little conversation with a couple of BBC journalists on the way out. JJ, that works for the BBC website, and Kerry Dean, long time follower of Andy Murray for BBC Scotland. And yeah, I posed that as is this grumpy Andy Murray, or is this, no, I'm in business here.
Yeah, I'm not here to mess about, yeah, Josh with you today. I'm here to, yeah, win this title.
Mm-hmm. But he's in Novak Djokovic's quarter, so is it?
The thing is,
even relevant?
I think he feels like I think it is relevant, because I think his tennis was getting to a stage where he started to look competitive, even at the top end, 6 weeks ago, and then obviously the injuries come. But this surface, if he was fully fit, I would give him a chance.
I also think he's probably, I don't think he would be bothered about being in Djokovic's quarter. I think he's desperate to play Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, I agree.
Even though he knows he would be a massive underdog.
I think he'd love the challenge, and he'd love the challenge with knowing the premium of pressure on Djokovic. He'd love all of it.
Mm. And crowd behind him.
I would love it too.
I think he'll get to the quarters.
Whoa, go on, Matt.
I do too. I don't like the sound of the noises about Alcaraz on grass. I think he will. I think he'll figure it out and be a future Wimbledon champion. But
he's also still playing with tape on his elbow.
Yeah,
what's
that stuff?
I have seen a picture of him lifting a trophy when he had the exact same tape on his elbow. I think Umag.
That was a long time ago. And clay.
Long time ago, clay, and not
a different
Wimbledon
sort of field, yeah.
I think that second quarter is a good place to be. Hubert Hurkacz is he's not the top seed in there. You've got Casper Ruud, but I'm not sure anybody would be tipping him for big things here. You've got Francis Tiafoe in there, who loves grass. You've got Cameron Norrie, who is desperate to break his duck of never having reached the second week of a slam, and was very open about that yesterday. He said, that is absolutely my goal. And I like that he's embraced that. I think that quarter is a good place to be. Again, haven't done my predictions. David, have you got Hurkacz coming through there?
Yes, I have. I found the Ruud, Tiafoe, Corinna Buster section really difficult to choose.
I'd say
Corinna Buster's done well to get his name on that section.
I've gone Tiafoe, and I mean, he hasn't won matches on grass. He's been losing to everybody.
Am I right in saying Bublik is in there?
Yes, he is.
I sort of thought maybe.
Yeah, he loves grass, doesn't he?
Catch fire and do well.
Didn't I think of that?
Goffin. Tommy Paul is in
Ugo
there.
Ugo Wimbert is in there. He loves grass. Tommy Paul,
who's been playing well. He played quite well at Queens. He played well in Eastbourne. Yeah, it's a land of opportunity, that section.
A land of brief opportunity until you lose to Novak Djokovic. Any other names that deserve a mention that haven't received one?
Well, I think Nick Kyrgios.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is in the section, he's in with Tsitsipas, isn't he? I think
third round, isn't it?
Yeah, Tsitsipas, the Mallorca champion.
Mallorca champion, who said today he's really revised his expectations on grass. It was quite interesting, actually, because I always think of Tsitsipas as somebody that has an existential crisis if they don't win any tournament they enter. And he was saying just now that he's just aiming for second week. He says he's realised how far off he is on grass and what a mountain it is to climb. And he said himself, he likes hard work and he likes challenges, so I think he will climb it.
That sounds quite healthy as a way to approach it.
I think it's a definite shift. definitely.
Yeah, I just think Kyrgios might beat him in the third round.
Yeah, I think so too.
He beat him Stefanik reunion a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, never caught on that, did it? Did we like Ons Arena? Just going to say that I did not.
I only like Mathurin. That's about all I like. I've got Tsitsipas beating Kyrgios.
Have you?
Oh. Yeah.
Five sets, a big factor there?
Yeah.
Mm.
Unfortunately, David, you have on this podcast utterly discredited yourself, so...
Or not. I mean, it could age incredibly.
Beatrice Haddad Maia.
I could be looking like a genius in 2 weeks' time. Unlikely. But come on, folks. Trust in me.
I think that is just about it, folks. Very, 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 very quick mention of the fact that the ATP have decided to allow off-court coaching. Do we like?
No. Can I tell you why?
Yeah.
Can I tell you why I don't like this? To me, this is the least satisfactory way of dealing with the coaching problem.
Well said. Yeah. Agreed.
Because on the one hand, you should either say, no, coaching shouldn't happen.
And enforce it more.
Clamp down on it and not allow it. Or you should say, okay, we're allowing coaching and you should go all in and actually make it worthwhile
for the
viewer.
We'll get translators, we'll get it mic'd up.
Production value.
Make it a selling point.
Like, okay, you're taking away maybe something from the sport, that essence of the sport, which I...
But
you know,
the Rubicon is already crossed by allowing it.
Yeah. So go all in. Don't have this...
casual wandering up and out.
Yeah.
No one gets anything from that.
What it is extra faff. And we don't have time for me to get on my faff soapbox right now, but let's table that because I do enjoy a rant about tennis faff. Tennis does not need more faff, guys. I'll save myself because we've got 14 Wimbledon daily podcasts to come and we cannot wait. What a wonderful place to be. I'm so excited. It's going to be brilliant. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant tournament. We have Willow, our Wimbledon mascot.
Tell us about Willow.
Willow, obviously the name is the same as Roger Federer's dog. It is not Roger Federer's dog.
I'd completely forgotten that.
It is Elizabeth Jones's dog. Willow was a mascot for us a little earlier in the year, actually, a weekly mascot. Now our Wimbledon mascot.
An upgrade.
King
for
Charles
good behavior.
Cavalier
oh,
Spaniel.
Oh, yes, I remember Willow.
Yes.
Because Billie Jean is half King Charles Cavalier Spaniel. Just a PS on that. Total lack of Willow Federer content.
Disappointing.
From Federer since getting the dog. You can't announce that you've got a dog, do a cute pic, and then not give us any subsequent photos.
Too busy chatting about his own logo rather than
That's not
dog.
What the people want, Roger. We have our mascots. Darwin, I'm afraid to inform you that you have predicted Beatrice Haddad Maia to reach the
Darwin.
Wimbledon final. Carter, you're my mascot. Gerald, the dearly departed Gerald, is Matt's. Billie Jean has Billie Jean King and Delana Kloss, who are in town for Wimbledon.
And are in great form.
Great form. Carl Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee are our executive producers and top, top, top blokes. And we have our first Wimbledon shout-outs.
Yes, for Carrie Hopkins
right,
in
Carrie.
Springfield, Illinois.
Hello, Carrie. Like Carrie Bradshaw.
Correct. And like Robert Hopkins, a former West Bromwich Albion player from the 80s.
Good name, Carrie
That's
Hopkins.
What you wanted to know, isn't it, Carrie?
We also have Sarah Gauchy Carlton, who is in Malta.
Right, Sarah.
Oh.
You ever been to Malta?
I haven't, no.
No.
There always used to be adverts for Malta in sort of early noughties Eurosport Grand Slam coverage.
Mm.
You know, those sort of slightly cheap adverts with dodgy jingles.
There used to be a really good snooker player from Malta called Tony Drago, who was very fast around the court, around the table. So I don't think we haven't got any tennis players from Malta.
Is that a good attribute for a snooker? I suppose Ronnie O'Sullivan's fast.
I loved it. You know,
anyway,
it
Sarah.
Quite a good selling point.
Thank you ever so much. There are lots of tennis, Sarah. Is Sarah Borwell?
Correct.
I thought
what
there were lots.
That is.
Well done.
Sarah Cerebes Tormo?
No, not quite. That's not
I think
quite
that's
spelling,
same church,
it?
Different pew.
Okay. Mm. All right. Who else have got that?
Well, I actually have a fact about Sarah, which I think you're going to like,
lovely.
David. She said, I used to provide the Cyclops line calling system.
Cyclops.
What do you mean, provide?
I don't know.
She made it.
We do need more details, don't we?
You know, when we were doing Wimbledon Relive the other day from 1997, they were talking about in the Tim Henman against Paul Harhouse match, they were describing how Cyclops works during a little sit-down.
And Cyclops used to be the absolute cutting edge of technology. Yeah. It was just a beep.
It was Hawkeye before Hawkeye.
It was just...
Was there a period of when Cyclops ended and then there was nothing and then there was Hawkeye?
I think there might have been. And there was also the moments where they just, like, turned Cyclops off because it didn't appear... Everybody suddenly became convinced it's not working. Turn it off. But I'm sure
that doesn't reflect on Sarah.
Absolutely, Sarah. I bet it works a treat, really. They don't know what they're talking about, do they?
Thank you, Sarah.
And last one today is a 14th anniversary shout-out for Aaron and Abby.
Hooray!
And this is a surprise for Abby. Oh. Aaron got in touch. They've been listening to the pod for a couple of months. They're in New Jersey.
Oh.
We love New Jersey.
Good work, Aaron.
And yeah. So happy anniversary.
Yeah, absolutely.
New Jersey, home of Amanda Anisimova, or certainly birthplace of Amanda Anisimova, and Bruce Springsteen, who Matt and I stayed up till 1 a.m. through quite a lot of Paul McCartney new material to watch at Glastonbury.
Catherine went to bed halfway through Hey Jude.
It wasn't halfway through, though. It was... you know, Hey Jude... The meat of Hey Jude had happened, and he was just on the na-na-na-nas.
You're the only person who's going to speak negatively about the Paul McCartney section, aren't you?
No, I don't want to knock it. He's incredible. He's 80 years old. He can't sing anymore. And for lots of people, that's fine. They enjoyed it anyway, because he's Paul McCartney and he can do whatever he likes. But I prefer a more tuneful time. He also did quite a lot of new material.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know he got
again, he's Paul McCartney. He can do what he likes.
Right.
Everyone seemed to be having a lovely time. I was there for Bruce.
Understood.
Mm. Matt's gone awfully quiet, but he shares my views, I promise you.
Ditch up.
That's not a denial. Right. That is quite enough of me slagging off the most beloved musician that this fine country has ever produced. We're the Tennis Podcast. This bit might have been edited by the time you listen. This is the first of our 15 daily Wimbledon episodes. We've already got two Wimbledon Relived episodes recorded last week, available exclusively to friends of the Tennis Podcast. If you would like to become a friend and get access to Relived episodes and all of the bonus content that we produce, and also support us in producing the weekly and daily shows, then the link is in our show notes. I highly recommend that you also subscribe to the newsletter, because there's hot shizzle in there, always.
There's some good stuff in there.
There's some good stuff in there. So do that, tell your friends, leave us an Apple Podcast review, and most importantly, enjoy Wimbledon, because that is what we plan to do. We will speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.